Well, I want to welcome everyone to the latest edition of Dale Byron's Poetry Podcast. And before I make a few announcements, including the new format and a couple of other things, I want to just do a little preview on what we're going to be talking about today. And we're going to take one of the famous, most famous William Stafford poems called Traveling Through the Dark, and we're going to hitch that up to a new perspective around ecological concerns. A fresh ecological interpretation will be the byline. So anyway, so stay tuned. Got a great poem and I think some great stories and some insightful things to say about the poem. I hope you will discover that. So, but first, let me give a few announcements. First of all is, there's a new title for this podcast, a new title, a new format. The new title is called Poetry, Gossip, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Poetry, Gossip, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. And I'll tell you a little bit about how I came up with that in just a moment. But basically, the format, if you've been listening, and thank you, by the way, in the last year and a half or so since this podcast started, if you've been listening on any of the traditional podcast platforms, then no worries. It's going to be there, and there'll be the audio podcast version. What is in addition to that is the video version. If you're seeing this, then you know it's there, and it's going to be on YouTube and some other platforms as we go along. So back to the title, Poetry, Gossip, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. And I should also give you the byline as well, which is, be joyful though you have considered all the facts. And that is a line from a Wendell Berry, the famous, wonderful poet, Wendell Berry. And the line is, be joyful though you have considered all the facts. More on that as we go along. That's the new byline. Now, in some ways, the new title is a kind of return to the future, back to the future, I guess the saying goes, because this was the title of a series of lectures that I gave, a course that I taught at Dominican University 14-ish years ago here in the San Francisco Bay Area. And the blurb for the course went like this. Fasten your poetic seatbelt and come prepared to experience poetry in a whole new way. This is how I describe the series of lectures. Let's see if there are poems that can actually earn a living out there in the real world. Let's luxuriate in poetry that engages, entertains, and inspires. We'll go for practical and powerful poems, ones applicable to our everyday lives, challenges, and triumphs. Together, we'll abandon those schoolhouse poems we never really cared for. We'll drop pretenses, jettison airs, and simply revel in the pure, provocative pleasure of world-class poetry. Well, I'm amazed 14 years later and all the classes and consulting assignments and lectures that I've given, that this description of my approach to poetry and my desire to bring these kinds of poems to those that I work with is still quite accurate. And so, I could say, if I wanted to sort of give a little summary of this, I could say to fiercely hitch up and take on any subject with poetry and do it in a practical way, whether that subject is about joyful things or difficult things, light, heavy, or anywhere in between. That's continues to be my vision for how to use poetry in our everyday lives. And so that brings me to, as I kind of teased before, that brings me to the poem and the current edition that we want to talk about. So let's talk about this title that I just mentioned, Ecological or Traveling Through the Dark, A Fresh Ecological Interpretation. Now, another way that I could talk about what I want to talk about with this poem is I could say that we sometimes get trapped, or at least I find myself, and I seem to observe this out there when it comes to these ecological concerns, the predicaments that we're in, the fact that we are overshooting so many of the Earth's boundaries, and we know this. But the tendency that I've noticed is that we can go to one or the other extreme. One extreme is what I call just ecological doom, where we are kind of frozen in the most intense kind of eco-anxiety. We're just frozen, and we feel a complete lack of agency, and we're just, you know, sort of along for the ride. That's one end or one extreme. The other extreme, of course, would be business as usual. You know, this idea that, well, of course, we don't quite know how we're going to do it, but yeah, we can continue to grow infinitely on a finite planet. There's going to be some magic technology or some white horse is going to come. The cavalry is going to come rushing in at the last minute and save us all. So we don't really need to worry about any of it. Those are the two extremes. Now, what I want to talk about is this idea that how do we not deny physics and deny reality, because we've got some very difficult things which are staring us down these days. So not to deny that, but at the same time, not to go to one extreme or the other, where we're either doing nothing, you know, or we're frozen. And either way, we're kind of, you know, we have no agency and we're just kind of along for the ride. The poem that I've picked out that I've already mentioned is Traveling Through the Dark, which is the most famous poem by William Stafford. He wrote this poem in 1960. And what I want to do is the fresh interpretation part is that I want us to look and see a concept which is sort of in the, we can say it's a systems view of life, a systems perspective. Which is just, you know, we don't need to get into any fancy stuff here with it, but just if you think about systems, it's just the realization that everything is connected to everything else. That's, you know, that's essentially it. And that that whatever we're experiencing in this moment, right, is a result of moments that came before, and that we, that all of the things in the environment are impacting on each other, you know? And so I think there was a great quote that said, every time we move anything in the universe, everything else moves. And so that's kind of the systems view. But what I want to zero in on is something called the specious present. The specious present, because what we're going to see is that if we begin to understand this kind of systems perspective, and more to the point, this idea of the specious present, which we will, I'm going to unpack right now with this poem and a couple of stories, that we can begin to, I think, not be drawn to the extremes, and can give us a sense of what I called earned hope and a sense of some agency in our lives. And I think that's a worthy goal. So let's just jump right in. And again, we'll unpack this more with the poem Traveling Through the Dark, written by William Stafford in 1960. Goes like this. Traveling through the dark, I found a deer dead on the edge of the Wilson River Road. Traveling through the dark, I found a deer dead on the edge of the Wilson River Road. It is usually best to roll them into the canyon. That road is narrow. To swerve might make more dead. So are you getting the scene? The protagonist, the speaker in the poem has come up and has found this dead deer. And we're gonna continue with the narrative with the poem, and it'll tell us more. But that's the scene. By glow of the taillight, I stumbled back of the car and stood by the heap, a doe, a recent killing. More facts. We continue. She had stiffened already, almost cold. I dragged her off. She was large in the belly. So the story is unfolding in the poem. The narrative is unfolding. And so the protagonist, the speaker in the poem, has dragged the deer presumably off the road, this thin mountain road beside a river, as we're going to see in just a moment. And so let's go on with the poem. I dragged her off. She was large in the belly. My fingers touching her side brought me the reason. Her side was warm. Her fawn lay there waiting, alive, still, never to be born. Beside that mountain road, I hesitated. Beside that mountain road, I hesitated. The car aimed ahead, its lowered parking lights. Under the hood purred the steady engine. I stood in the glare of the warm exhaust turning red. Can you kind of imagine and you feel that scene? It becomes more and more visceral. The exhaust turning red because of the red of the taillights. This whole scene begins to emerge. And the poem continues. I stood in the glare of the warm exhaust turning red. Around our group, I could hear the wilderness listen. I thought hard for us all. My only swerving, then pushed her over the edge into the river. I stood in the glare of the warm exhaust turning red. Around our group, I could hear the wilderness listen. I thought hard for us all. I thought hard for us all. My only swerving, then pushed her over the edge into the river. I heard or saw, I never got to meet William Stafford, by the way. I fell in love with his poetry after he had already passed from this realm anyway. And although I have met his son and we have had a kind of ongoing conversation over a number of years. Kim Stafford, who's an amazing writer in his own right, and an amazing human being as well. But I heard William Stafford talk about this poem once, and he was saying that he took it to a writer's group. Remember 1960s when he wrote it, took it to his writer's group. And I think the writer's group immediately said, oh, Bill, you can't end the poem like that, it's just too difficult. You can't do it. And of course, he decided right there on the spot, as he said, that he was going to end it exactly that way. And according to Kim's story I heard him tell once, his dad also decided that that was the end of his participation in that particular writing group. So Yeah. So this brings us to this point of what we talk about is the specious present. And if you think about that word, specious means superficially plausible, but actually wrong. Superficially plausible, but actually wrong. So as we sort of just sink into this poem, and you see that there's this difficult thing that has happened, this very difficult thing that has happened. But essentially, the specious present was that fawn was not going to be born. The fawn was still alive at the very moment when the speaker in the poem talked about the event. But the truth was that what had occurred, the things, the system, if you looked at the entire system, that what had occurred before the speaker began to describe this particular slice of time, that fate for the deer and the fawn, or fate for the fawn in particular, was already set. Now, let's talk about a story. And I'll tell you a couple of things to kind of dig into this point, because I think it's a way for us to begin to, for me at least, to understand systems theory, that everything is connected, and in a way that is more visceral, more emotional, and actually simpler. So that I can actually get it and I think apply it to some other things. So let me tell a story. First of all, there's a quote that's attributed to Martin Luther King Jr. And I don't know what the exact quote is, but it goes something like this. He said that when you are pulling people out of the river, when you're saving drowning people out of the river, many people, or a number of people, will, and it's wonderful that they'll do this, but they will give you support. They may give you money, help you buy life preservers to throw for the drowning people, ropes to tie the life preservers to, but they will help you because everybody sees the need for being able to save those drowning people. But he also said, he continued on in this quote, he said that if you go upriver, however, and you begin to investigate who or what set of circumstances are throwing those people into the river, then some people get very upset about the implications that those questions might lead to, and the changes that might be inferred in the overall system, in this case of society. And so you can get support for pulling drowning people out of the river, but if you go up to see who or what set of circumstances are throwing them in, then you get far less support, and some people actually push up against you for asking those questions and doing that. Now, back to the specious present. So what happens is, and you see this all around, and you see this ecologically, is that because we are not going back up river, right? We're not going back up river to actually deal systemically with what's going on. What happens is that more and more drowning people come down, and eventually the system, or those who are trying to intervene, get overwhelmed, and people begin to drown. Well, that's kind of the specious present, right? You say we ought to be able to pull everybody out of the river, but you can't do it because you begin to be overwhelmed. No matter how much you try, you're overwhelmed and you start losing people, because at the same time as we're pulling drowning people, of course, out of the river, as best we can, we need also, as best we can, to go upriver and begin to work on the system so that we are not overwhelmed with drowning people and overwhelmed so much that we are not able to save many people. Now, let me give you another story or analogy. Let's imagine that you're on a ship. Let's imagine it's a big, huge ship, and it's going, I don't know, 40, 50 knots, 60 knots, however fast a big ship can go. And that ship is 50 yards off the shore, heading right for the shore at whatever, 50 knots, how many ever miles an hour that is, that's fast, 35 or 40 miles an hour. And then the captain of the ship looks at you and says, "Here, save us. Here, here's the wheel, save us." Now, you don't have to be a nautical expert or expert in ships or engineer even to know that a big, huge, you know, ton ship, many tons, is not going to be able to turn in 50 yards. In fact, I think I read, some time ago, that it takes about 5 miles for a big, huge ship to make a meaningful turn, to make any significant kind of turn. So even though you have your hands on the wheel, let's say that you grab the wheel, because you're 50 yards from the shore, and you're going 50 or 60 knots or however fast you're going, that ship is going to hit the rocks, the shore. It's going to crash. That's a specious present. It looks plausible that you could stop things, but because of the system, because of what everything is tied to, because of what's happened before, we would have to go way back in time. Well, in this case, we'd have to, you know, we'd have to go back 5 miles offshore, and we'd have to change the trajectory of that ship. Now, and if we did that, we could completely avert the catastrophe. Let's say there's, you know, I don't know, 5,000 people on the ship. We could avert that catastrophe. So this is, to me, a visceral way to understand the circumstances that we are in. And yet to know that if we are able to go upstream metaphorically, right, and see what or who or how the circumstances are happening that are causing, in that example, the drowning people to be in the river, right? If we can do that, we can at least begin to understand some kind of agency there. And so that if we see the system, we see this notion of the specious present, we know that if we keep waiting until only the specious present, then we know that you know, we can gnash our teeth, we can do everything, but physics, systems theory, just basic reality tells us that we are not going to be able to change things. So to me, understanding this, not just as an intellectual idea, that's important, but to understand it in the gut. And I think that's what this poem helps us do. He says, "Beside that mountain road, I hesitated. The car aimed ahead, its lowered parking lights. Under the hood, purred the steady engine. I stood in the glare of the warm exhaust turning red. Around our group, I could hear the wilderness listen. I thought hard for us all, my only swerving, then pushed her over the edge into the river." Even as much as we are gripped emotionally, or maybe because we are gripped emotionally by that scene and that poem and that story, it can give us the sense of agency to know that we, in whatever way we can, need to proverbially, metaphorically get back up the river and begin to claim our agency and to claim what we can do in the system, so that we are not constantly caught trying to pull, metaphorically, too many drowning people out of the river. One of the things I love about poetry, one of the things I love about hitching up poems to everyday challenges and joys and difficulties and losses is that it can help us not only have the idea, which we need gifts for the head to help us intellectually get things, have insights, but we also need gifts for the heart so that we don't just get it on an intellectual level, because I don't think we're going to change the situation we're in, the predicament we're in, the ecological straits that we're in, if we're only doing it with intellectual ideas and not doing it with our heart. And it's not going to help for us to be frozen and lose all sense of agency and to be frozen in doom any more than it's going to help us to deny basic reality and basic physics. I think poetry can help us stay right in that centered middle path where we do have earned hope, not unearned hope, but earned hope and earned agency in our lives. Okay, we have come to the end of this edition of the new podcast called Poetry, Gossip, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Be joyful, with a byline, be joyful, though you have considered all the facts, Wendell Berry. Okay, if you've enjoyed this, or you learned from it, or you've been inspired, then please pass it along to other people, you know, or make a comment on YouTube or wherever you listen to your podcast. And again, in particular, if you know other people that might, you think might benefit or enjoy this podcast, then please pass it along to them. Having said that, in the meantime, until next podcast and next poem, next video, please take good care of yourself.